Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the July 2024 edition of Poet Radio. My name is Chris Funkhauser, host of this program on WGXC since 2015. For tonight's show, I'll be doing something a little different. Instead of having a guest, I'll be doing an archive-based show using a somewhat challenging experimental method. A few years after I began working as an editor with Penn Sound, I realized I'd made a number of recordings that are not relevant for that archive. So in 2014, I began building an independent archive hosted on leased servers called Funk's Soundbox Version Archival. Everything you hear on this program is being drawn in real time from this online resource. There's some history to the development of the interface, which you can read about, and the most important facts regarding Soundbox is that it contains more than 200 recordings. Users of this web application, coded with HTML5 and JavaScript, are able to open up and layer numerous sound files at once, should they desire. This feature I'll definitely be making use of during tonight's program. So we started out with the recent Staatsburg Amtrak recording, which you may have noticed has become Poet Radio's calling card of sorts, and I'll DJ for the next hour, taking content from the Soundbox. Last week I took a look at the contents, made a list of some tracks to play, and picked out some fantastic material. I'm doing all this in my studio in Staatsburg, but the same thing could be done by anyone, anywhere you can get online. Okay, as some of you have surely heard, the great American poet Andy Clausen recently passed away, and his ashes were buried in Woodstock a couple of weeks ago. Andy's work was put in the spotlight in at least three editions of this program over the years, and we'll miss his heroic verse. The most recent batch of recordings to be posted on the Soundbox features Clausen reading at the launch of his memoir, Beat, in November 2018. Here's an excerpt from that event.
Yeah, I'm going to skip around a little bit, but I'm going to focus on two of the characters that are prominent in the book. In 1986, my poet lover at the time moved to NYC. She sublet a rent-controlled apartment from an Europa teacher and New York literary figure. Paid him $3,000 up front. I had a couple readings, the Apple, New Brunswick, the old standby Court Tavern. She flew me out and right away it was good. No doubt she dug me, missed me, even wanted to go the extra yard to please me. This made me uncomfortable. I loved her, but I knew it wouldn't last. We had other destinies. One morning I'd been drinking with Gregory Corso. Alan had given me an unpublished poem he'd penned and typed up. Gregory said, "Is it any good?" I said, "It's missing something. Alan needs to relax. There's something too mechanical about it, like Alan through a computer, too manicured." Gregory said, "Let's improve it." I said, "Let's not. We can't do that." Mm-hmm. Gregory could talk me into a lot. It's just a punny exercise. First, let's change Fighting Ernest Hemingway's ghost to Fighting Ernie. Sounds better, right? Guess so. We edit and edit, mostly Gregory. Then Gregory wants to go show Alan. I protest. You think you're a poet? Where's your courage, your integrity? You worship personality. The muse passes you by, mister. Reluctantly, I go. Alan sees we're drunk, and it's not even noon. Looks at our editing job of his poem and has Bob Rosenthal make a copy and file it. Back outside, Gregory goes into a pharmacy and gets his adhesive paper he needs for his new upper bridge. I get to see him in. He comes out and says, "Look at me! Teeth. Never seen him like that before. A perfect upper bridge of teeth." He says, "It isn't me," and throws the teeth in the refuse can. First time Alan introduced me to Gregory Corso, he said, "Here's my robot." Robot? So the B generation is going to make sport of the proletarian baby boomers they turned down? I'll show them, robot. Of course, they'll start by calling me a dumb Canadian. I say, I'm not Canadian. I think I remind him of Kerouac. Gregory and I eventually argue over whether he did, in fact, write the lines of his poetry I quoted. I never wrote that, mister. I show it to him in the book. The boy who kissed the moon in a barrel of rain, the girl that heard the moon in a bell. A couple people told me no one had stood their ground with Gregory since the semester started, saying, wow, no one else talked back to him. A few days later, buying nitrate wine at Liquor Mart, he confides in me, tells me, I'm glad you came. It was boring before you came. I didn't know there were any guys like you left. He said once that I was not all wimpy like Ginsey's proteges. See, my proteges are real men, Corso says, introducing me to Ted Jones. I thought he tells me the truth. My favorite poet digs me, not yet realizing I was dealing with the master beat con man. Let me start by saying, in my opinion, the one known as Gregory Corso is a fantastic poet, a philosopher shaman who will always be quoted. Gregory enlivened every room. Anyone he opened up to or on has vivid memories. He has been a much disliked, even despised, but well-loved, roguish, classic genius, renegade, archaic, and revolutionary syntax virtuoso, elegant master painter of the accent that inspired the word. When they talk about bad boys, crazy poets, artists, musicians, and sex and drugs without violence, and if they still talk of Shelley and Blake and the outstanding women poets that will emerge from these volatile times, the enlightened minds, they'll have to say the words, Gregory Corso. Elegiac Feelings American will be read for political traction and examination of truth and our sad human desire to believe lies. Gregory called himself Poet Man. Poet Man's take on the 18th century. For the declarers of independence, to declare it only for part of the whole was to declare civil war. So Gregory's reading at USF, and he's doing his ta-da, one finger brushes his hair back, sometimes hand on hip pose after letting out.
That was Andy Clausen, recorded in Woodstock in 2018. As mentioned, material featured on tonight's program is drawn from Funk Soundbox, version archival. It's a resource I consider to be a transitory place where I can post audio files produced by myself on a need-to-share basis. Many different types of recordings I've made across the years, mainly of poets and musicians, are posted. A few MP3s have migrated over to Penn Sound. I'm trying to get this thing to get going right. Though not all the material pertains to poetry, it's interesting how Penn Sound builds some of its archive out of things that are first posted here, how the network allows the sharing and growth of materials. If you start an archive for personal satisfaction that you want to share, putting it up on the network will enable a wider audience. Onward we go. Here are a couple of riotous pieces by Maggie Estep.
All right, now here she is. She's a lover of cheese. She's on the bus. She's one of us. Ladies and gentlemen, the trademark lips of Maggie Estep!
Yeah, during the song bombs.
Hi, you guys. Come closer, please. Come on. I just showered.
Yes!
And yeah, it was pretty exciting. So I'm walking down the street, minding my own business, when this guy starts with me. He's sucking his lips, going, hey, baby, yo, yo, yo. And I get a little bit tense and nervous. but I keep walking, but the guy, he's dogging my every move. Hey, miss, he says, don't miss this. And he grabs his crotch and sneers ear to ear. So finally, I turn around. Hey, buddy, I say, I'm feeling kind of tense, buddy. I got a fucking song in my heart, so come on, let's go. I got a huge bucket of non-dairy creamer and some time to kill, so let's do it. We'll make some foul-smelling artificial milk and drink gallons and gallons and gallons of it. Get our bladders exceedingly full, then sit on the toilet together and let the water run in the shower and torture ourselves by not letting ourselves urinate as the water rushes loudly into the bathtub, okay? We'll do it together. Writhe in utter agony, just you and me, and I'll even spring for some of that blue shit for the toilet bowl, all right? I mean, that's my idea of a good time, so how about it? You wanna... The guy backs up a bit. What's the matter, baby? You got something against men, he says. No, I say I don't have anything against men. Just stupid men. Okay, so the people get this idea, oh, that's a male bashing poem. So here's a female bashing poem. It's called... That's right, equal time. This is called Feminist Rock Critic Bitch from Hell. What is it with these girls? They hate it that I call them girls. They hate everything. They criticize everything, including each other. They get in free to see bands, then they hate the bands. They hate everyone. They especially hate rock and roll. They think I'm one of them. In fact, one came up to me and said, hey, Maggie, I love that poem you do about hating stupid men. Could I have 750 copies of that poem, please? I'd like to analyze it to death, then write about it for a rock magazine I hate. And I said, hey, listen, girlfriend, lighten up. Just because I'm a tough chick, bitch, goddess, poet, babe with a big mouth and I talk about hating stupid men does not mean I only like women and hate all men. I love men. Come on, come all. I like them brown. I like them brown, white, yellow, blue, tattooed, sniff and glue, young and sweet with filthy feet or old, worn, torn, and gentle. I like to look at them. I like to touch them. I like to love them, and I sure like their butts. I love men. And I love women. Courtney, PJ, Eileen, Miles. I want piles of glorious women. Eliza, Tracy, and even poor, confused Madonna, too. But what I hate, what I really hate, is feminist rock critic bitches from hell. You're bitter and wordy, and you dress like shit. So get off my dick, okay?
Yeah, that was the late, great Maggie Estep, recorded at the Lollapalooza Festival, Saratoga Springs in 1994. I wanted to mention a couple other things about the app which is driving the show tonight. Funk's Soundbox contains recordings of various types: poetry readings, studio and events, lectures, music events, and 20th century radio broadcasts, as well as some Wee Press projects. Ambient sounds and recordings are publications by others. Comparatively, the Soundbox is a bit more rogue than something like Penn Sound, for nothing else due to its design. With a full-on DIY mentality, the idea is to have a type of easy-to-use digital grassroots pipeline through which to deliver writing and art to the public. The material may be more difficult to consume than it is in more refined resources, but hopefully, given its multi-layered pliability, is better than presenting a simple list of contents. Sticking with the 90s for the moment, here's a piece by Chris Stroffolino, recorded for the Little Magazine Volume 21 CD-ROM in 1995.
To not see democracy as a flattening is to leave America behind with the lightning that doesn't last long enough to meet the demands of time, which turns out isn't a voter or a consumer, but a worker you can only meet by working. This puts us in the driver's seat of the cars that don't exist, because the fact that we don't work on assembly lines no longer means laziness, except to those who not only try to make you feel guilty for making love on welfare, but also do their best to be the anchors on which your emotionalized attention must moor. Since surely the only reason you're at sea is you're a stowaway, and surely swimming rivers might as well be walking on water in El Salvador, where there is no war no more, but the peace in which property is poverty and poverty is property in a minor key between the lines of the newspaper, like the prison bars poetry tries to break out of, in the process gets accused of imperialism and isolationalism, both of which are luxuries. And you're back in the rain in which what you saved is playing possum, or so you hope, as you dreamt that midnight came and pulled you from the top of the burning ladder into the next day as a theme of hailstones hurled at cabbies in a walking city.
That was Chris Stroffolino, recorded in Albany in the mid-90s. I never expect that someone would spend a copious amount of time browsing through the soundbox. Someone who is drawn to the material might indeed go down a type of virtual rabbit hole and be delighted by what she or he discovers, or else might turn away quickly with its lengthy pull-down menu of listening options, all of which cannot be viewed at once. The archive presents a type of mysterious investigation for its users. Some of these recordings are very low-quality bootlegs that only a real fan of the material or artist would value. This project is partly made for them. This one is for all of you Sparrow fans out there.
This is a genre called time art. New type of art. Time art. Recently I invented time art. It happened quite simply. My friend Anique Taylor organized a public reading entitled Phoenicia Spoken Word and printed out 1,000 postcards. Now I'm quoting from the postcard. Join poets and writers for the second annual Phoenicia Spoken Word, Friday, July 18, 2014, 6:30 p.m., Mama's Boy Cafe, 7 Church Street, Phoenicia, New York. Mingle, buy books, coffee, desserts, 6:30 p.m. Spoken Word performance, 7 p.m. I agreed to help her distribute the postcards, in part because I was one of the readers. I gave out many of the cards, but not all. After the event occurred, I decided to continue giving out the postcards as a work of time art. In other words, I was inviting people to enter the past and attend Phoenicia Spoken Word. Each person who receives one of my cards is confronted by the inexorable truth of time. Probably she wouldn't have gone to the event anyway, but now it's absolutely impossible. She stares at the card, aware of the gulf between herself and the past. I have made time almost visible. Of course, our relationship to time may change. At this point in human history, we cannot visit the past. Perhaps sometime in the future, we will. In the future, we may enter the past. And then, if the recipient of my postcard still has it, she may attend the Phoenicia spoken word back in 2014. This is one of the numerous possibilities opened up by the new genre of time art.
That was Phoenicia's Finest Sparrow, recorded in Woodstock in August 2014 here on Poet Radio. Now I've got a real treat. This is Eileen Miles, recorded at Soundscape at Basilica in Hudson, September 2017. Well, we're also listening to the Thurston Moore Group at the moment, while Eileen's introduction occurs. This Thurston Moore recording is made in November 2018 at BSP in Kingston.
My father came again as a dog. My father came again as a dog. The man named Terence came again in the month of April, approximately 30 years after his own death. No joke, he came again as a dog named Rosie. I titled her so. She came to me as a tough Irish girl, and I cobbled a name for her. According to that assignment, I have been attached to the dog corps for as long as I can remember. Simple liking led me to the annals of the dog, not the horse. On television, a boy with soft hair lived in the country with a furry animal with sharp pointed ears. They had their own show. In another show, a gang of city kids had a being along for the ride, one that walked on all fours and a ring around his eye as if to say, seeing is kidding. Look deeper inside. Do as the dog does, and the dog does it through taking pictures and sending the pictures around the universe. The team of children and dogs is the strongest link on Earth, and if we are to survive as a people, it shall occur because of the strength of the connection in the ranks of these numbers. The future army of the Great War shall be them. I knew I would be one alone in my family. I was in the middle, the quiet one, the receiver. I felt the tugging from the male side and another from the female, and those were my siblings. Yet this in-betweenness, this aloneness, hear it now, is holy. I begged my parents fervently for an animal to be an army with me. My story would have moved so much faster if that dog friend had come aboard so early on. If dog had come into my child life, my father would not have needed to return. He knew this and brought me a small sandy dog I named Taffy. And yet my mother returned Taffy, this male, to the ASPCA the next morning, where he most likely died. His crime, that he had cried through that first long night, as all dogs do. I would have learned so much from him. Get this, I would have been a prophet at 12 instead of 60. But I am very grateful that I've had Rosie and her antecedent, the man, my father. And as it stood, I was alone in my family, alone in my world. My one ally in the house, the man, my father, was dying. I do need to talk about it, hear it, the orientation of alcoholism in order to talk about my father. As David Bowie suggested in a powerful film, and as certainly Jesus Christ suggested too, of the human tribe, we thirst. There's a simple reason for this thirst. We are fish. You know, the earth was once covered with water, and when the higher being, who I choose to call Dog, felt tired of being alone, the waters receded, and suddenly there was land. And the fish crawled to land and grew legs. Why wouldn't Dog go into the waters and speak to the fish in another time? Why did the very essence of the fish, some of them, have to change? If you had the powers of a dog who created at least the universe, and I have a feeling Dog created many universes, but I don't know how many. I am privy to a great deal of knowledge, but not all. And this is the very nature of my humility, even restraining the waters of alcoholism in my own life, and I know less. And one would assume that Dog could do anything, but no, because there are simple laws that even Dog needs to obey. You cannot speak underwater. Thus, there is no poetry, the original speech. Dog wanted to have a conversation with man and the dogs within us. And the fish, frankly, needed to speak. You know how Dog accomplished all this. He pictured it. He pictured an earth covered with water, and he pictured it dry. Listen to me. And the fish going up on shore and discovering feet. Dog is lonely, we can see that lonely in every dog's eyes, and that loneliness is love. It causes us to do good things. Hear this. Such is the power of our army, because the enemy of that love is dying. Every dog is fading, slow, returning to the waters of time, which is the nature of Dog's eyes. His seeing is the sea. Meanwhile, on this earth, on this planet, we are thirsty. Are we brave enough to see this thirst as longing? We want to go home, so we go to the beach. Understand, we wait for night. The little living human is framed is continually by opposites. One of the ways we experience this in the living realm is in the limitations of things. Can we accept this longing, feel it, even maybe occasionally go down to the beach, jump in, dry off, and walk on? Do we accept our fate? The holiest people live by the sea with their dogs. Look at Mary Oliver. That is a saint. But there are a great many challenges to our frame. Think of a mind as a sea, its own inland sea. We can connect to the enormity of others, the sea in them. We can connect to Dog, hound of the ocean, as the ancients once said. But there is an agony at first, but maybe a little all the time, a kind of oceanic stretch. A kind of oceanic stretch. Aching. Aching, impossible thoughts. Some people take a giant leap themselves by being gay. Other people need to kill them, cannot accept the thought, the gay thought. That things are not as solid as they seem. So there are many sudden, inexplicable deaths. How can we abide? There is a sea. There is Dog. Can we trust in that deep, silent, underwater bark? The ripples allowing a stretching of thought, a wide lookage, to be living in that lighthouse. Thoreau knew it, wrote about it. Yeah, you know him. Hear this. To be standing in that light, all that light, because every day, as we are dying, our gaze is getting tiny without Dog. We become sorrowful. We can cry out, wait for this now, and hear her sorrowful, knowing bark. For Dog will come to comfort us. We can do evil, be violent, use love as if it were a common bone lying on the ground. Be violent. Use love as if it were a common bone lying on the ground, an inscrutable bone, using it there, yes. The only true logic is sound. If you don't know, listen. Bend cures. Careful here. An angry murmuring, an ill-placed yelp, a grrr can set off a maelstrom of pain, tragedy, and disease. We need to get it right, to listen well, to not do wrong. We need to abandon our logic and go back. To wait and Dog is to get on all fours, not just on your knees, but to worship the Dog privately and wait. The waters are coming. We can and we will replace the violence with silence and wait. The peace of the Dog is promised and soon will be upon us. His waters will rock us and hold us. He is the sleep. He is the night. But normally, humans want a drink. I'm a little parched, they might say. How about a couple of brewskis? Some smart drinks, say the lifted eyebrows under a spectacled gaze. One eye shifts towards another in an office, a tipping gesture like a drink to the lips is made, glasses into purse, computer turned off, okay? There is so much surrounding this urge to drink. A young person might feel a powerful tugging in their crotch might begin, a thudding inside. It is the sea of desire to which all are privy. And all around, the youth, the message is no. What you feel is wrong, but it is inside me. This is what she says. This is what he says. Is this feeling not right? The youth drinks and the conflict is resolved. The illusion of alcohol is that we are putting the ocean inside. But no, get this. Instead, we are stilling it. We are dying. Alcohol is mold. Past ripe, a sickly sweetness that makes a person go crazy. Of beer, they say, the kiss of the hops, but it is the hiss of the snake. The snake laughing uproariously whenever a horny teenager takes a drink. Her head cast back in exultation, her hand fluttering at her chest. She, the antithesis of the dog, the agent of counterfeit sweetness, is replete with a message of death, not life. Sssst. It is not the healthy surf pounding against the rock. Another picture, the balloon of your soul deflating. When two people meet and engage in the act of fertilization simultaneously, a million pictures are surging in their brains. Think of your parents making love, if you will. Pay attention. An Academy Award, a cavalcade of pictures is coursing through their heads. Yes, right up here. You are one of them. The universe is a tiny yearbook, but told in seconds. The possible second of each of us. I must explain here for the first time, perhaps, that the act of sex is not the sex act as we understand it. Oh no. The tiny picture is key instead, a thought entirely understandable to children who intuit procreation entirely. They are for it, standing at their drawing pads in kindergarten. Don't get the wrong idea. The collusion of childhood and sex in our time is the greatest of crimes because we are wiping out their supreme board by imposing too early animal sexuality on a greater moment. I am saying the child is a virtual movie theater. Get this, not of sex, but of creation. Get this, true creation. The first 8 or 10 years of the child's existence are full of these pictures. The Supreme Board, listen here, your light bubbling portrait gallery, the cattle call of images from which all of us were chosen, this is the wild field of life. People in their natural state are sometimes unable to make a selection. You know how the drunkest people often have children easily? Well, the earnest twos, good people, can be plugging away at it for years. Even the lesbians trying, good people too. It is enormous, the responsibility, which is forgotten after the act, always. I tell you now, the two of them engaged in the act must see you momentarily. You are the thought. They must go, yes, her. Few can sail into this mode of selection readily. It's a trance, really. Sex is given humans to distract them from a lighter, deeper choosing. That is a fact. It is easy, a child could do it, pick a face, a nature they like from the sea of entities ready to be born. But the world already is terribly crowded. The child must pass a few years. This is the waiting time, the true gestation. Later on, they may enter into the deep, rich valley of sex, the place where the human first encounters the nature of soul. And it is there, at last, that our widest choosing has begun, as we begin absently putting our arms around vagrants, elves, and villains, around thinkers, teachers, pilgrims, and beasts. In this rambling sex time, and the map of creation is streaming through our heads all the time here on Earth, hear it, it is manifested by the fitting of bodies one to another. It is a holy place, not a holy act. Like universes, if you see where I'm going. I have given you many box. This is one. The greatest crime on the earth, of course, is rape. Animals commit this crime as well. Dolphins and ducks. The spider, many times. She then eats the perpetrator of the crime. I'm not saying the spider's way is useful for us. Rape is, prepare for this thought, it's stealing the envelope of another. Bodies, though gorgeous, are only containers of the sea. If you force your way into a message that is not intended for you, it's a kind of suicide. The message will annihilate you ultimately. You're no one now, on and on. You are no one for generations if you do it repeatedly. It's very hard for us to understand it on this plane. The greater suffering is endured by the one who has forced their sex on another one. Holy people have said this about their torturers, too. It is very hard to think about rape this way, but it is true, that there are no pictures. If a child is born of this union, they either have no mind or they are sage. There is nothing written on these minds, and either nothing good will come of these people, or they are the saviors of our time. In the future, I see a small yellow dog in this position, and he is the prophet, and he shall be the end of the story. For today, I see my own teacher, Rosie.
Yeah. Yeah, Eileen Miles on WGXC, reminding listeners that all the materials on tonight's program is taken from Funk's Soundbox, an archive of recordings I've made that's posted online at http://weepress.org/soundbox/archive.html. Next up on tonight's playlist is Beth Lysick, recorded at the Writers in the Mountains Festival in Arkville, April 2018.
I'm a newish resident of West Hurley, and I just saw a bear this morning. So if anybody wants to let me know what to do about that at a break or something, that would be great, because I wasn't quite sure. I'm collecting strategies. Okay, so I'm going to read this poem that was published in Best American Poetry, and it was one of the first things that I'd ever written, and it really freed me up in my thinking about what poetry is, because I had never considered it a poem, and I read it somewhere, and somebody heard it, somebody wanted to see it, and it wound its way into Best American Poetry when I had never even thought of it as a poem. Maybe you won't either. Here it is. It's called The Empress of Sighs. Mom and Dad have abandoned the family home and retired to Palm Desert. They moved into one of those gated communities of steel-framed homes on Gerald Ford between Date Palm and Bob Hope. Just cross the intersection of Frank Sinatra and the Gene Autry Trail near the corner of Fred Waring and Phil Harris, who, for the kids under 50, was a big band leader married to a big movie star whose name no one could quite remember anymore, except she used to drink with Lucille Ball in her PJs at Fletcher's and died a mess. Who doesn't anymore? Mom says getting there is a snap. Just take a left on Palm Canyon until you reach Desert Falls. Bear left at the fork of Indian Canyon and Canyon Plaza, taking Desert Canyon to Canyon Sands. This is where you find Rancho La Paz. Click on 2 for the gate. The guard waves you past. You're on Avenida del Sol, where you continue on crossing Vista del Sol, Plaza del Sol, Vista del Monte, Sunny Dunes, Camino Paracela. Make sure you heed the golf cart crossing. And then Thousand Palms, Emerald Desert, Desert Isle, and Palm Desert Greens. Left on Sagewood, right on Sungate, left on Palo Verde, ending in the cul-de-sac of Casa La Paz. I just love it, Mom says. You love it, I say? Yes, I love it. Then she calls to Dad, who's enjoying himself on the 18-hole putting green, located just 3 feet outside the kitchen sliding glass door. Don't we love it, hon? He tips the brim of his white cap, a cap he would have seen on someone a year ago and called them a fag, and says, love it, another crappy day in paradise. Ha, ha, ha. Mom clears her throat a little and sighs. She is the empress of sighs. Well, it's still a little funny. That same funny tax bracket, same funny year-round tan, same funny cathedral ceilings, same car, same stock, same paranoia, same medication, same politics and annoying anal polyps. The same leather interior, glossy exterior, and liposuctioned posterior. And here comes the neighbor driving up in a luxury sedan, just like your luxury sedan, except he paid a little bit extra for the headlight wipers and the gold-linked license plate frame, and you didn't. You thought they were useless, extraneous, a little much. And now your neighbor comes rubbering by, waving real slow, doing the grown-up equivalent of, "Ha ha," which is basically, "Ha ha, I am worth more than you." And mom sighs and admits she doesn't feel at home just yet. This mom, this empress of sighs, empress of after-school treats and frumpy sweaters and marathon tickling and the 52 casseroles cookbook, doesn't feel at home. So I map out a plan, I make a list on how one feels at home here. I say you need to play bridge, throw a party, plan on some tennis, it'll feel like home. Polish the silver, throw out old photos, balance your checkbook, it'll feel like home. Vow to eat more fresh fruit, get your armpits waxed, drink 6 8-ounce glasses of water each day, and it'll feel like home. We'll squeeze all your blackheads, clip your toenails in bed, watch 13 straight hours of television, complain about what trash they show on television, start writing a letter, stop writing the letter, it makes you think about yourself, yell at your mother instead, quit drinking, go on a crying jag, threaten to deport your gardener. Consider rhinoplasty, blepharoplasty, a tummy tuck, forget to water the plants, buy plastic plants, forget to dust them, buy bananas, watch them rot, buy books, pretend that you read them, start a collection of something you think might be worth something someday. Now yeah. Turn off the lights, sprawl out on one of your matching earth-toned leather sofas and pick a very high number and start counting backwards. You're in the middle of the desert, the wind picks up, and when you run out of numbers, it will feel a lot like home.
Beth Lysick via Funk's Soundbox on Poet Radio. We're moving toward the end of the show, but I'm going to play a really terrific piece by Fred Moten, recorded at the Mackie Sessions, Durham, North Carolina, September 2018. I also wanted to mention at this point that in the background of some of these pieces you've been hearing some textural accompaniment. I told you about Thurston Moore's group before, and right now we have Marilyn Crispell, Mark Dresser, and Jerry Hemingway recorded at Real Artways in Hartford last July.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with so many old friends, and on such a great occasion. And, you know, I've been nervously thinking, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to read? I should try to make something new, you know, that would be a proper tribute to Nate. And by the time I started working up enough energy to be properly nervous for that, I found out I would be opening I'm between a rock and a hard place. I remember one time when I was a grad student at Berkeley, at Zellerbach Hall, where students at Berkeley could go for free, they had a Sonny Rollins concert. So the only price I had to pay to hear Sonny Rollins was that I had to go sit through Branford Marcellus first. he opened for Sonny. But luckily, Sonny came out and blew like three notes of St. Thomas, and the memory of Branford had disappeared. And I always was like feeling kind of, I always thought it was funny. And now I realize this is the same thing that happened to me. But soon there will be no evidence that I was ever here. Anyway, no point in me trying to write a proper tribute to Nate, I realized, because I started thinking about the Eddie Murphy definition of tribute. where he used to, as he began his comedic career, a lot of his shows were what he called tributes to Richard Pryor, in which he would do Richard Pryor's routine. And I've been doing Nate's routine for like 30 years, so it's all a tribute.
Right on.
This is just some more. This is a kind of a continuation of a poem, Come On Get It, that's in the field trio that I kept working on, because Joe told me I should try to do something serial. I'm trying. So the field trio ends with 12, and this starts with 13. I'm not going to read the numbers. Actually, I probably should. 13. This is the world, and here I am, and as I am, but not at all, the work is all, and not at all, and all in all, and all in nothing. And Prince says, please come from nothing, from all of Zora and all of Dara. The world is dry land, earth is water. Our regular shit is muddy and irregular. Our shit is the shit in this regard. Regardless, we started walking the floor of the sea to turn it over, plowing the muck, low country, just like mules of the leafy green, sempiternal and sodden underground, thinking the sudden thickness of our steps, infused with periodic swimming to get the air we can't breathe, saving breath in the muddle of our passage, as Mullen says, or been fixing to say. Fixing, we say like fit. Imagine a little swelling of the space after the consonant, just a little bit broader time before the X turns to a T, which is implied, then silence, then acts that same little hollow before the end, because the end won't come. Then one last breath, and keep writing that shit beneath the floor as our commune. The heavy step of getting down taps lightly in makeshift repetition, this constantly coming back down beat, embosomed in unslit density, recessive unrest in black bottom, the silky lyric viscosity of how we move held down, so that all we can do is take the leg, fling limb in contact, play moss or ball just like the common amputee, as cool as the other side of the silty pillow. Our shit is irregardless in this regard. That anti-citational burst is the book of life, and all we got to do is come out to show them we ain't got to show you shit. We're posthumous and prenatal. The shit is posthumous and preternatural. In the muck, the deep on shore, waiting, wade, bathing, we laugh to keep from laughing like a tremendous submachine. The earthiness of life is irreducibly moist. Digging is a kind of diving. Having turned to the turn, we see that shit. We see the shit. We see our shit and keep our head above water so we can dive, dig. An amphibian, unarmored, adrift, underderived from a prehistory of fallenness, black life is wet. Like when Nate tends to certain fluidities of gait, but gracefully mud stuck in the brutal clearing of land. Unforgetting the river's memory, like Morrison says in Mississippi. Like Sine says when the escapist sings rose at summer while singing I never learned to swim, while swimming down a broken street. We're whales, and he don't know how we embrace, submerged as Mary Lou and world as Darwish. What's it feel like to see through blackness, mixing singing and drowning, sounding and dancing, but hesitating forever to be a signal or a judge? This they asked on holiday, in protest of themselves, surrounded by themselves in bolts of blue, though that honorable fabric don't feel so good. Whiteness is the set of interpersonal relations. The interpersonal is an intrapersonal fantasy. The intrapersonal is an impersonal fantasy. The impersonal fantasy of the intrapersonal is your picture, imagination in the law of solitude. On the other hand, in which this same hand is held off blue, an extrapersonal folding. The image of hands held in folding, sociality, blackness, is unavailable, but the tangle, sociality, blackness, infuses every image. My black death is my debut, my stole. Done up in blueprint blue, it sure looks good on you. It just don't feel so good to disappear in a loose arrangement of flowers. Slave narrative ain't the genre in which one gives an account of slavery in oneself. Slave narrative is the disappearance of oneself and the diffusion of slavery in the giving, which can't be accounted for of the account, sounding drowning's loose arrangement. Just be making something all the time so you can use it to be making something with somebody all the time. Maybe the distinction is between empathy and empathy. One emerging from a point of view, the other occurring in shatter and entwine. Tyrion, Tarion, but which knows which is which? Maybe it all goes back to that same black Athenic vehemence and passion, an infimum of outness sung for the caravan. She from around the way of ain't no way, and ain't no nonviolent way to look at it. The camera pans down, moves down, spiraling into the wine and urine stained hallway. And what the camera moves toward as I, a hand that somehow was and is the camera, the hand's gesture at and with in all this beauty is the camera's motion, is having fallen in fallenness, is all that beauty. Lorenzo Moten, Humanity's Seat, 3rd and 8th, Tuesday, Thursday, April 18th, 2017, 14. The smile of life is a blackbird. The blackbird is the creator of a happy living. You see the sun, a garden, a river. A blackbird shall be seen. A blackbird brings joy to the world.
Fred Moten on Poet Radio. We're getting really close to finishing here, and I hope you have enjoyed the show. I know it hasn't been perfect, which is all right. It was good fun putting it together for you. We will be riding out the rest of the program with a poetic song by Ricky Lee Jones. Recorded a small concert in Blairstown out in the Delaware Water Gap region of New Jersey, 2013. Thank you for listening.
is